Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, we knew it wouldn't take long for there to be political ads related to the video that came out last week from May and Mitt Romney's fundraising speech, where he talked about the 47% and how he's not worried about them. Of course, the context was he didn't think he could win them over in the election, not that he didn't care about them at all, but nonetheless, the president is now running an ad with the audio showing middle-class workers who pay taxes, so I'm not sure why he thinks they're the people that Mitt Romney was talking about. Nonetheless, Mitt Romney's out with a new ad of his own, and that's our good martini today. He talks about his plans for lifting up the middle class, and here's an excerpt from that ad.
President Obama and I both care about poor and middle-class families. The difference is my policies will make things better for them. We shouldn't measure compassion by how many people are on welfare. We should measure compassion by how many people are able to get off welfare and get a good paying job. My plan will create 12 million new jobs over the next 4 years, helping lift families out of poverty and strengthening the middle class.
Jim, still not a ton of specifics there, but the contrast in approaches of these two campaigns, I'm sure the Obama campaign wouldn't agree that that's their approach, but that has been their argument, that people on food stamps is actually helping the economy. So for Romney to be out there saying this is not how we chart success, getting people good jobs, good benefits, and building a rising tide that lifts all boats, like JFK said way back in the day, is a very compelling message, and hopefully people are buying it.
This is tough to describe on a podcast or a sound-based program, but it features Romney speaking directly to the camera. And I know some folks in politics who really are convinced this is the single best way for a candidate to connect with people. That something about the style of quick cuts or montages or, you know, amber waves of grain and kids going to school, all the stuff we remember from Morning in America.
Right.
That actually that kind of turns into just kind of, you know, visual background music. That kind of, you know, doesn't really resonate with people. That if you want people to listen to your candidate, you have to metaphorically, and in this case, perhaps even literally, look them in the eye. So I think this is closer to what Romney needs to do. I also think that if people feel like they don't know Romney, then this is one of the things they can do. You know, just encounter him, have him speak directly. As for the message, I think it's a very good one. And I think I just wish he could, you know, tie more directly a sense that this is how the administration measures success. This is how the administration thinks government is doing its job. And I think it's a great, you know, resonating message there. That, look, the purpose of government should not be to give you stuff so that you feel better. Government's goal should be the point that you are independent, where you don't need them to give you stuff. And I think that's an argument where conservatives can win time and again if they make the pitch correctly. And hopefully this ad will go a long way towards doing that.
As we mentioned, and Mitt Romney mentioned, the president's policies have not worked. And there's more evidence of that here on Thursday. An already dismal projection for the second quarter of this year. The original projection was GDP growth of 1.7%. Now it's been revised down to 1.3%. Even more anemic than we first thought. And Jim, it's not like we spend a lot of time talking about durable goods orders, but it does matter. And it cratered 13%, more than 13% in the last reading. So the idea that the president's trying to peddle out there that we're as good as we can do and things are on the way up, it's just not true.
Yeah, I mean, pollsters have been telling you for a while that people's perceptions of the economy has grown increasingly partisan. We all remember back in 1992, the perception that the country was in a terrible recession when unemployment was, I believe, somewhere like in the high 5 to 6% range. Something that looks like happy days compared to where we are today, Greg. Some pollster had basically looked at the numbers of how people responded to the typical questions of, do you think the economy is getting better, getting worse, or staying about the same? And almost every Democrat, almost every month of the Bush administration said the economy was getting worse, whether unemployment was 4%, whether unemployment was 6%. During the post-9/11 shock housing boom, that they were their assessment of the economy was completely immune to the actual data. It didn't matter whether the actual economic conditions indicated the economy was doing well, the economy was doing badly. Their guy was not in the White House, and they decided things were bad and that almost nothing that could happen. Including, I believe, at one point during the Bush administration, we were creating in the neighborhood of 300,000 jobs a month. It didn't matter. They were not convinced that this was, you know, a good economy. When you look at way things are right now, it is kind of maddening that this economy has not stuck to Barack Obama more. I mean, he has the argument of saying, oh, I inherited a tough situation, and maybe that buys you some time for that first year, for that second year. What's astounding is this notion that 4 years in, you just can't hold Obama accountable for the economy. It's not his fault, blame Bush, et cetera, et cetera. 1.3% is really anemic, and now people are saying we're really in the category of, we're not in recession, but we're stuck in neutral. And when you put in all the fiscal cliff stuff approaching at the end of the year, it's really not all that unthinkable we will be in recession next year. When you're at the fiscal cliff and the guy, and people are saying forward, I don't understand why voters are embracing that or why voters are not rejecting that in such wide numbers. So,
and sadly, it seems to be working right now, whether you believe in skewed polls or unskewed polls. Right now, I think if you look at it objectively, the president's got the lead, but we're happily looking forward to 3 and 4 debates if you count the vice presidential encounter. So hopefully there will be time there for common sense to prevail, but we'll see. The clock is definitely running low. What are we at, 40 days now? So on to martini number 3 now. And a day or two ago in Politico, Roger Simon, certainly no conservative, kind of wrote this snarky satire piece talking about how Paul Ryan perhaps sees how the campaign might not end up being successful. He won't be vice president, and so he's trying to sell his supposed future presidential ambitions by distancing himself from the man who's at the top of the ticket even before the votes are taken. And so there's commentary throughout the piece where he refers to Mitt Romney as stench. He's increasingly dismissive of Romney, supposedly. He's doing PowerPoint presentations that Mitt Romney's campaign officials don't want him to do. So he's trying to chart his own course rather than just doing what the handlers want him to do. At the very end of the piece, it says this. Author's note, Jonathan Swift did not really want Irish people to sell their children for food in 1729. George Orwell did not really want the clocks to strike 13 in 1984. Paul Ryan, I am sure, calls Mitt Romney something more dignified than stench, and Microsoft did not invent PowerPoint as a means to euthanize cattle. At least I'm pretty sure Microsoft didn't do that. Okay, apparently the left loved this piece, but apparently they loved it so much they forgot to get to the end of it. Because here's Lawrence O'Donnell, who was one of many on the left who bought this hook, line, and sinker because he didn't finish reading the whole thing.
Yes, the stench. That is what Paul Ryan is actually calling Mitt Romney, according to Politico. Reportedly, Paul Ryan has been marching around his campaign bus. I like that image, the marching around the bus. Marching around the campaign bus, saying things like, if stench calls, take a message and tell stench I'm having finger sandwiches with Peggy Noonan and we'll text him later.
I'm sure there was a big, long apology on the subsequent edition of Lawrence O'Donnell's show, whatever it's called. I don't think that probably gave it more exposure than it gets on a normal night. But Paul Krugman, as you pointed out in the Jolt, fell for this as well. And so apparently it's not too hard to fool folks on the left.
Yeah, and I'm sure we have our overly credulous folks on our side. I do think this is a little more common over on their side. But one of the things I've mentioned in the Jolt is that we find this almost every cycle. People believe what they want to believe. You know, in other words, if you think that the Romney-Ryan campaign is an absolute disaster and Ryan and Romney must hate each other because Republicans are hateful people and we're all selfish and greedy and we all turn on each other like a pit of vipers and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Well, then, of course, you know, you'll hear this story and you'll eagerly repeat it because it confirms what you've always believed about Republicans. The example I used in the Jolt was this email that was floating around in 2004. It was finally posted on Democratic Underground, quoting a friend of the Kerry campaign who's friends with the Bush campaign manager, Mark Melman. Now, Greg, you're a smart guy. You may remember it was Ken Melman.
Correct.
Who is the Bush campaign manager. And Melman is apparently just blurting out stories of a terrible disarray and fighting and chaos in the Bush campaign. Because as we all know, Republican campaign managers love to call up the opposition and tell them how badly they're doing. And it's a long email, and I posted the whole thing just to let people know. I mean, somebody thought up this very vivid, imaginative scenario of Cheney swearing at Bush sounding like a mental patient and, you know, Hughes and Rove at each other's throats and everybody's, you know, blah, 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 you know. And, of course, the whole thing's made up. As we all know, Bush won, and there was no panic within the Bush campaign and all that kind of stuff. But to a lot of Democrats, this is what they wanted to hear. This, you could argue, in the closing days of 2004, this is what they needed to hear. There's always going to be this receptive, credulous audience for this sort of thing. So the first thing I'd say is to folks on the right, if somebody sends you a poorly sourced email of Axelrod and Messina and all those guys at each other's throats and Obama calling Biden a moron and you know, oh, this we're doomed. As plausible as details like that may sound, you know, Obama calling Biden a moron and stuff like that. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And, you know, don't be a Paul Krugman. You know, don't be a Lawrence O'Donnell and you know, believe something is true because you want it to be true. Not the first time MSNBC has done this sort of thing. I guess it's what we've come to expect from this. You know, they don't do any fact checking. They don't, you know, bother to check any of this stuff. What's really kind of fascinating is that the implausibility, like finger sandwiches with Peggy Noonan. Really? Really? You found that totally? And the other thing is that, so Roger Simon of Politico, who is, you might want to call this the good Roger Simon and the bad Roger Simon, because there's a good Roger Simon who works for Jama's Media.
Right.
I don't think the Politico Roger Simon is necessarily a bad guy, but, you know, like really, he's going to get the inside scoop of Ryan trashing his running mate? Really? Really? Exercise a little skepticism, folks, and you'll be mentally healthier as the campaign wears on.
Jim Garrity provides good life lessons on a frequent basis on this podcast, and he just issued two of them a moment ago. Folks, in life, you don't want to be like Lawrence O'Donnell, and you don't want to be like Paul Krugman. There are myriads of reasons for why you don't want to be like those two, and this is just one of them. So, Jim, another great public service. Thank you.
Think of it as like the NBC, the more you know, public service announcement. Just kind of picture me going on stage with, hey, kids, don't grow up to be like Paul Krugman. The more you know.
I think those would be far more effective than the stars of Friends or whatever shows they've got doing it now. So
there you go.
Jim, very good. Talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. As always, thanks for being with us and join us again for the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch.